Hello, and welcome to the Learn Chinese Insights podcast, brought to you by ChineseTrack.com. In each episode, we interview expats from around the world who have learned Mandarin Chinese as a second language to find out how they learned it and how they use it in daily life. You can listen to this episode in your podcast app, as you're doing now, or you can watch it on YouTube using the link in the description. So today I'm happy to have a friend of mine, Jamie Roof. So before we begin, Jamie, can you give us a quick introduction in Chinese? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what you're doing here, and then we'll go from there.
是，大家好，我是 Jamie， 我的中文名是罗志明。我已经住在台湾住了11年了，然后目前我的我是美国人，然后目前我的工作的状况应该是说一言难尽，所以简单来说我就是一个教育领域的顾问。谢谢大家。
All right, thank you very much. So now you mentioned in the intro you've been in Taiwan for 11 years now. So let's start from the beginning. What brought you to Taiwan in the first place?
So I actually came to Taiwan by accident. Prior to coming to Taiwan, I was living in China for almost 3 years, and the company I was working for at that point, they transferred me to their operations headquarters in Hsinchu. So when I came to Taiwan, I didn't know anything about it. It was completely by accident.
All right, so let's go further back. So you're from the States, so how did you end up in China from there?
A lot of this has to do with some life planning starting late in high school and in university, where I majored in Chinese and I was very interested in it. And by the time I was in my senior year of university, I had pretty much decided that once I graduated, I wanted to move directly to the Chinese speaking world. I didn't really have much of a concept of Taiwan, so China was kind of where I wanted to go. So that's what initially brought me there. So after about a month after I graduated from university, I was in Shanghai.
All right, let's go further back. So you said you majored in Chinese. So at that time, was that a common thing for people to do? Like, what made you choose to learn Chinese that way?
My father was an entrepreneur for 12 years, and he had his own business, and most of his customers and clients were in China, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, and so on. So I remember when I was very young, maybe not even 10 years old, him coming back from Taiwan or China and showing me the paper currency, the coins. And I remember the first time I saw the Chinese characters and that leaving such a deep impression on me. I'm like, people read this? People write this? You know, it was mind-blowing to me. So later, towards the end of high school, I had the opportunity to take some Chinese classes, and I leapt at it. So that really influenced my trajectory for the next 15, 20 years.
So could your dad speak Chinese?
Not at all.
Oh, not at all. Huh? So yeah. You said you started dabbling in Chinese, and then you decided this is something you want to actually specialize in.
Yeah, I mean, I think in retrospect, it was something I enjoyed, and I didn't really have an idea of what I wanted to do, so it just seemed like a natural course. But yes, at that time, I was deeply interested and passionate about it, especially in my university in the early years in China.
So what was the path from after you graduated to finding a job in China? Was that easy to get through?
It wasn't, actually. For me, I think that was the hardest part, was just getting a foothold there. I was applying to a bunch of different places, you know, many of which were kind of stretch or just kind of hopeless attempts. But I did find an educational consulting startup in Shanghai. This is back when the very early days, I would say, in China, when these type of consulting firms that would help Chinese high school students apply to universities in the U.S., North America, and so on, were really just getting started. So it was really kind of at the beginning of that wave. So I managed to find a startup in Shanghai that was started by an alumnus of my university. So I applied there and I managed to get a job there. So that's kind of what led me, at least got me over to China initially.
So when you got to China, the Chinese that you had gone through, you know, your degree, was that enough to get by? Like, did you consider yourself fluent, or like what level was your Chinese at that point?
If we're using like European framework and like kind of knowing where I am now and like in looking back, I would say maybe I was a B1. I knew enough that I could get around, I could buy things, I could have simple conversations, but that's kind of when you take that leap from formal academic classes to being there in the trenches on the streets, that's when you realize there is a gulf. And I realized, oh, wow, I have a lot more to learn.
Hmm. So when you were learning Chinese in the U.S., did you have a chance to practice what you've learned or use what you've learned along the way?
I did. I was fortunate that all of my university professors were Chinese speaking, native speakers. So that helped. I was also fortunate during the summers. Quite often, sometimes I would tag along with my dad on a business trip to China. So I could get there, get some touches. And also in the summer of 2008, during the Beijing Olympics, I did a program called Columbia in Beijing. So that was about a 2-month program where I was there almost the entire summer. So that for me was like, I think where I had that moment, anyone who learns a foreign language where you kind of have that switch over where you're like, okay, I'm not translating in my head anymore. I'm just kind of hearing it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, for me, that was like that crossover point where like, okay, like now I feel like I'm not just kind of in that learning stage. I feel like I've progressed to another level.
Mm-hmm. So on that note, like you said, when you first got there, you were at maybe like a B1 level. So from there, to improve your Chinese further, other than living there, did you take any steps?
Yeah, so pretty much the only time I took like classes or lessons or even worked with a tutor was just university. As soon as I arrived in China, it was all self-learning. And over the years, I've gone through different methods and I've experimented with different things. At least back in those days, the one thing that worked pretty well for me was just flashcards, especially in the early days. I mean, I had a stack, you know, a huge stack, maybe of like 1,000 or 2,000 flashcards that I would just kind of go through a lot. Once I was in China, and especially like the early years in Taiwan, I started experimenting with things like Anki, you know, spaced repetition software. That also helped a lot. And that's also where I was trying to shift from just studying vocabulary words and items to actual, like looking at sample sentences and really trying to interact more with native content.
So when using flashcards, what was your process? Like, how did you decide what words to add to your list?
Admittedly, it wasn't a very intellectual process. At that point, my mindset was I wanted to understand everything. So I didn't really put the vocabulary words I put into that stack through much scrutiny. And I think as I got better and better and could distinguish between like what words you frequently encounter and which ones maybe you'll only see in a book or in a written form, I started to distinguish like, okay, maybe these ones I'll study because I can actually use them. And maybe these ones I'll study just so I can recognize it. So that process definitely got better. I feel like I went through a few stages. There was like the flashcards and then the Anki. I think the one habit without a doubt that has been most instrumental in my continuous improvement, even to this day, is just having a dictionary and constantly looking up words. So I'm sure you and your listeners are familiar with Pleco. Mm-hmm. I've had that on my phone as long as I've had a phone. And even to this day, I'll be sitting at the dinner table with my in-laws or with friends and I hear something, I immediately look it up. It's a reflex now. Mm-hmm.
So in your years, obviously technology has improved during that time. So you mentioned Anki, the spaced repetition, and then Pleco. Are there any other technology that has helped you along the way?
For sure. I think in the past 2 years, there are tools where you can do like text to voice. So, I mean, for example, if you use an iPhone, I imagine it's probably similar for Android devices. The voice typing, I think, is actually a very good tool because usually if they can understand your Chinese, then that means you're probably not too bad. So I think probably the past 5 years, my learning protocol has been, I would say, not nearly as like systematized or disciplined as it used to be. Now it's more organic. But I would say probably the one thing that has helped a lot is a lot of listen and repeat. Because for me in the past 5 years, one of my biggest goals was really to try to reduce, if not eliminate, my English or American accents. So for me, it was doing a lot of listen and repeat. So whether being find podcasts or content and just trying to maybe listen to 3 to 5 second batches and just repeat it. I've been doing a lot of that recently.
So when you came out of university, as far as your listening and speaking versus reading and writing? Was there like a big gap between the different skills?
This is maybe a bit of a hot take, but at least for me, I always felt that learning characters was the easier part. At least for me, I just found like, okay, just, you know, a lot of rote study, memorization, just go through. And that for that part, it felt okay for me. So I would say without a doubt, listening and reading or just the character part was definitely stronger than speaking and listening. I've always felt that speaking Chinese was the most challenging.
And I assume after you move to China, then you have much more opportunities as far as the listening and speaking goes.
Yes. In fact, I sometimes, when I bump into people who are in Taiwan learning Chinese, I say, what are you doing here? You should go to China. And the rationale behind that is, at least in my experience, I know things have probably changed in China a lot, in 12 and 10 plus years, but at least there, hardly anyone spoke English. I mean, you could go on the street and you were just forced. Mm. You were forced to use Chinese. Where in Taiwan, I think if they see you struggling at all, a lot of people, I think the bar for even just English in Taiwan is a lot better than in China. So I felt like it was a very good environment for me. Just you're forced. Mm. You're forced to use it.
I suppose here that also varies where in Taiwan you are, like big city versus small town somewhere. So when you moved to China, that first startup that you're in, did you have to use a lot of Chinese there?
Not really, because a big component of what we were doing was working with Chinese high school students who were preparing to apply to schools in North America. So I think the idea was to use English with them to help them prepare. Mm-hmm. So really, the Chinese that I was using was outside of their work. Mm.
So you had mentioned earlier that you had started in China and then you eventually moved to Taiwan. So I assumed you moved from job to job and did different things. Were there any jobs that required you to speak in Chinese?
Yes. I can name two, I would say, highlights that when I look back on kind of the trajectory of learning Chinese that had a huge impact on my life and also the development of my Chinese skills. The first one was after a few months of working for that consulting firm, I met a general manager of a DRAM testing and assembly factory in Shenzhen who said, you know, I could use someone like you. Do you want to work for me? I'm like, sure. I mean, because for me, at that point, that was the type of opportunity I was looking for where I could actually find a job opportunity in China where I could use Chinese on a regular basis. And that's absolutely what it was. I worked as a factory line supervisor for a year. So I had a shift of like, I was running a shift of like 40 to 50 operators, all Chinese, of course. So that was Chinese all the time, every day. And I was like one of two foreigners in that entire company. So that was just being completely thrown and immersed in a Chinese speaking environment. So that was like the first like uptick where I improved a lot. And as I kind of mentioned, tying back to constantly looking up words, like living in Pleco all day, every day, and having these huge vocab lists. And then the second one, a few years after I came to Taiwan, I had the very special opportunity to work as a executive assistant to the chairman and CEO at Foxconn. So again, a very similar situation where I was completely immersed in that environment where it was just Chinese all the time. So I would say when I look back over the past 10 years, those two jobs had the biggest impact on the growth and development of my Chinese skills, for sure.
Would you say for foreigners who come to Taiwan or China, who, like you, they want to get into a job where they can use their Chinese and, you know, have some impact, are there a lot of opportunities there?
This is just my impression. Don't take my word for it completely. My feeling is that the days of you being able to speak Chinese at like an intermediate level and that leading to like a really good job, I feel like those days are past us. It used to be, you know, especially in China, I can't speak for Taiwan, but it used to be in China, like maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even if you could just speak like B1, B2 Chinese, that was really a huge value add to finding a job. But I think nowadays it can, but I think your skill level has to be much higher. I mean, I think nowadays for it really to have a meaningful impact on your job and career, I think you really now need to be almost at that C1, C2 level. Because especially in China, the thing that changed a lot was a lot of Chinese who had studied abroad in North America, Europe, Australia, and so on, started coming back. Mm. So now you're competing with bilingual native speakers, and when it comes between the two, it's kind of a no-brainer for employees. Of course, it depends on the context, but my general feeling is yes, you can, but I think the language requirements are much stiffer.
So on that note, there's many foreigners who come to Taiwan or China who get their Chinese to a certain level and then it kind of stagnates. So as you're saying, if you want to take it to that higher level, do you have any recommendations for people? Like maybe you're at an intermediate level, and what would you suggest they do to get it to that higher level?
Absolutely. So what you're mentioning is like that intermediate plateau, right? Like where a lot of people get stuck. And I would say I was stuck at that for probably 5-6 years. Really, the answer is quite simple, which is you need to give yourself a lot of native content. Now, I'm not talking about kind of like the Stephen Krashen, just loads of incomprehensible input and that's it. I would say based on my experience, I think a combination of getting a lot of native input, so reading books, magazines, articles, listening to podcasts, but also doing some output, whether that be repeating what you're listening to, talking, practicing your conversation skills, working on your accent. I think you need to keep that feedback loop running a lot. So for me, reading and listening a lot, but also trying as much as you can to speak and say the new things that you're learning so that you can kind of close those loops. I think that's probably the best way. So if you can find, like, for example, if you like reading blogs in English, then try to find Chinese blogs that you would enjoy. If you like reading fiction or nonfiction or personal development in English or your native language, then try to find that in Chinese. That's what I do. I enjoy reading business books, personal development books in English. So now if you're in Taiwan, for example, you can go to the Esleet bookstore and I'll just find, oh, that looks like a book I would read in English. I'll try that in Chinese. And I think that's the easiest way to keep improving. I think the most important thing is just to have some type of systematic approach to it. So writing down vocab words, looking up sample sentences, and nowadays with ChatGPT and Gemini and all these tools, you can easily compile sample sentences. If you're not sure about grammar, it can explain it for you. So I feel like nowadays it's like the golden age of teaching yourself a language or continuing to develop your skills by yourself, and along with various resources, of course.
So on that note, because I think your experience is unique because you actually did your degree in Chinese. So let's say you had just come to Taiwan or China without that background and you wanted to learn Chinese, based on what you know, like what path would you take?
Okay. I would say, if you're someone who you're not a polyglot, you're not super self-driven, you know what to do, I would probably suggest maybe just finding either a tutor or going to one of the local Mandarin training centers that has like a curriculum that can get you from 0 to 1. I think that would probably be the most efficient way. Just go from 0 to 1 following a curriculum. And then once you have that initial foundation, I think a lot of the things that we've been talking today will be more helpful. On the other hand, if you're kind of what I mentioned, you have an experience with learning languages, you're driven, you know, you're disciplined, then I think you can, in Taiwan, you can buy these textbooks, you can buy these resources to get started. I think that's the best way to go from 0 to 1. And then after that, really what it is just starting to, I think my personal feeling is I think a lot of curriculums around the world put too much focus and emphasis on Chinese characters right out of the gate. And I feel like that's part of the reason I think there's such a high attrition for a lot of people learning Chinese, is that you're trying to learn all these characters and you're trying to learn how to speak at the same time. And for a lot of people, that can be like almost like trying to learn two languages at the same time. So I'm not saying don't learn Chinese characters. I just mean, I think for a lot of people, if you just focus on vocabulary, actually learning the language, the spoken language first, and then transition into learning characters, I think that could be a much less demanding path. At the end of the day, if you want to really improve your Chinese to a much higher advanced level, of course, you do need to learn the characters. I would say for starts, if you can get yourself like that first 1,000 or 2,000 is the hardest. And then once you get past that, you develop that critical mass where you start noticing patterns and you can connect them. And it's not like, oh, I have to memorize every single character I run into. I know that's compared to what's out there, that's kind of like an unorthodox take on it. But I would usually recommend people, if possible, just focus on learning the spoken language first, because then Chinese, I think, is really like learning another language. You know, you can get, I think in 6 to 12 months, you can get to a B1 level reasonably. And then after that, start learning the characters.
So regarding characters, what's your thoughts on writing versus just learning to recognize characters? Because it seems writing is a skill in day-to-day life. You don't need to really write a lot. But yet, if you can read, that gives you enough to be able to type.
It's a good point. And I think it depends on what you want out of the language. For example, even for me, someone who's used Chinese in a professional work context in China and Taiwan, I really didn't have to write, like handwrite in Chinese that much, if at all. Maybe just signing your name or occasionally have to fill out some forms, but that's about it. So if you don't have plans on doing a lot of writing, especially with pen and paper, then I think learning to recognize is sufficient. Although I do think there's something about, you know, having to write it out that helps us cement that passive recognition even more. So I suppose there are two ways you can look at it. I mean, I think my gut feeling is I would still recommend writing it just to help to drill it into your memory. But I would say don't get all upset if you're occasionally you can't recall how to write a certain character. It happens to everyone, even native speakers. And especially now with phones where people are just texting, even now, some characters you'll hear native speakers, oh man, I can't remember how to write this one character. So it's okay. I would say don't be hard on yourself.
All right. Looking back at your journey, as far as the learning Chinese goes, would you change anything as far as the path you took? Like, do you wish you had done something earlier or not focused on this or anything like that?
Absolutely. If we're talking about learning Chinese, like learning the language, without a doubt, I think I look back and I've been learning about almost 20 years. But to me, that's kind of a meaningless number. Because I believe where I am now, I think I could have gotten to this in a much shorter period of time, knowing what I know now. So along those lines, I wish I had started diving into native content much sooner. So finding books, magazines, articles, finding content that I like, or even just doing a lot of listen and repeat, I feel would have accelerated the learning process much faster. So I would say, provided you're kind of past that initial stage where maybe you have like 1,000 to 2,000 characters under your belt, just start diving into content. And yes, there will be a lot of stuff you don't recognize, and it might be a little grindy at first, but honestly, I feel like that's the fastest way that you can really progress to the next level. This is my humble opinion.
Can you touch on something you had mentioned earlier when you were talking about native level content, and then you said you don't mean just the comprehensible input. So what is the distinction there?
If you follow a lot of polyglot content on YouTube, for example, there are many people who are big advocates and proponents of Stephen Krashen's comprehensible input, I suppose, methodology, which is the idea kind of N plus one. So wherever you are, try to find content that's just a little bit above. And that's that Goldilocks, you know, it's that sweet spot where it doesn't feel too hard, it doesn't feel too easy. But unless you're using, I mean, fortunately now, I think AI tools make that a lot easier, where you can take kind of what I mentioned, which is native content, which might be N plus 50. And you can use AI to tailor up or down the difficulty level. But before we had AI, kind of what I would do was brute force it, where I would find an article, maybe in like a business magazine here in Taiwan, and maybe 40, 50% was I didn't know. And I just would brute force it, where I would using Pleco and writing down the words. I would work through the article, and it might take me a week. And then I found the next time I went to the next article, I didn't quite have to use the dictionary as much. And again, and again, and again, that's difficult. And maybe a lot of people might not have the desire or the discipline to do that. But for me, I felt like that was really crucial, instrumental to my learning process. But nowadays with AI, I think you can copy and paste an article and you can ask it to make it a little easier, and then it can simplify it to you. So I think nowadays it's easier to get to that N plus one.
All right. So living in Taiwan as an expat and being able to speak Chinese, how does that help you in day-to-day life here?
Well, for me, my Chinese skills have been fundamental to my career trajectory for the past 15 years. There's no way I could have worked in that factory or I could have worked for Terry Goh if I hadn't had my Chinese skills. And even my current work situation now, it's all because I'm a highly bilingual individual in Taiwan. So for people who are committed to living in China and Taiwan, expats and immigrants who are committed to living here for the long term and want to get the most out of their career, I think it's highly worth it to continue to develop your Chinese skills to that C1, C2 level. That's where I think a lot of opportunities will start to open for you. If you're just at B1, B2, it depends. But really, I think it's once you start getting to that higher level where I think some doors can really start opening for you. And especially if you're, for example, even if you're just an English teacher in Taiwan, Taiwan's seriously trying to push a curriculum of bilingual education. And the most difficult talent they're trying to find is highly bilingual talent. So for example, even if they're trying to do subject teachers in Taiwan, a math teacher, and that they want to incorporate some bilingual elements in the class, it's hard to find Taiwan math teachers who have a good enough English to do that. So even if you're just an English speaker, if you're a certain level in Chinese, that just makes you that much more attractive to different schools. That's just one area. If we're talking about corporate, if you're, for example, an English teacher who wants to transition out of education, I think learning Chinese is one of the easiest ways to get your foot in the door. I think, honestly, you're holding yourself back. You're shooting yourself in the foot if you don't work at your Chinese and continue to get to that higher level if you want to develop a career in Taiwan or China. That's just my opinion.
Okay. So let's say you've done the work, you've gotten your Chinese to a decent level, and now you want to get your foot in the door in some career path. Based on your experience, now you mentioned meeting someone in a bar or something. How do you recommend people network or get their name out for opportunities?
Yeah, I think I did the unusual path of really doing local companies, whether it be China or Taiwan. And I think a big part of that is if you want to get those type of opportunities, then you need to network and be where Taiwanese are. So I think a lot of expats and immigrants have a tendency to kind of stay in their bubbles. So I think you can kill two birds with one stone here. You can network and continue to work on your Chinese. For example, on Facebook, you can find networking events where it's all a lot of young Taiwanese. There are also maybe more prestigious, you know, business, what is it, Business Network International, organizations like that, Chambers of Commerce. They're hosting events with local companies. Long story short, I would just say try to network more locally and try to break out of those foreigner bubbles if you want to find more of those local opportunities in corporate. And of course, just to share an example, I got my job with Foxconn through LinkedIn. It's very unusual in the Western world for a CEO to look for an executive assistant with a job description on LinkedIn, but some of those things maybe are a little more common over here. Mm-hmm. So continue to check out the job boards, stay active on LinkedIn, and just keep your antennas up. But yeah, I would say between proactive networking locally in local circles, looking for job boards to see if they're looking for bilingual foreigners, I think those are two good starting points.
And would you say with this, the local culture, the whole Guanxi concept, that that's even more important to network and kind of work your way up rather than just, you know, cold calling or cold applying?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, of course, I think the most effective way is that if you have any Taiwanese in your network, to work those relationships first. Taiwanese and Chinese, I think, are much more receptive to that type of word of mouth referrals than cold leads. And not to say that cold networking doesn't work, but I think you'll initially have more success if you go through your Taiwanese connections first.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this knowledge and all these insights. Appreciate that.
No, it was my pleasure.
All right. Thank you.